happy to be with you here this morning. I'm sorry my wife couldn't make it. She's having a lot of problems with her leg and will have to have knee replacement sometime next year. But actually, we didn't teach in the rooftop schools. I'll explain what that was. Rooftop schools in the early 60s, there was a big fire in the squatter area in Hong Kong. Squatter area is kind of slum. People put shacks together. And the government started building public housing at that time. They would build them 7 or 8 floors high. And they had flat roofs. And different agencies could put schools on the roof. They would just put a kind of temporary roof up there and some tin walls and start a school. And one of the brethren missionaries, couples, Bill and Viola Decker, had a number of rooftop schools for several years. Now, there are no more rooftop schools now. The government has purpose-built schools for all of the children. But the Deckers started a secondary school in Hong Kong in 1974, and we went out to teach in the secondary school. So just a little background. For 5 years, I taught at the school in Hong Kong. All the students were Chinese, but the language of instruction was English, so we didn't have to learn the language. We were only there 4 or 5 days before we went into the classroom, and most people can't learn Chinese in less than a week. For 5 years, we did teach in the schools, and then 1979, we had a big influx of Vietnamese refugees. Some of you have heard the Vietnam War. We lost. And the communists had promised the people, as soon as we reunify the nation, everything's going to be wonderful. And by 79, people realized things weren't getting so wonderful, and they started leaving. The refugees coming to Hong Kong, the first ones were mainly ethnic Chinese. They lived in Vietnam. Some were second or third generation in Vietnam, but they came out, and then later more ethnic Vietnamese came out. We worked in the camps for 20 years, saw a lot of people saved. Now, I know a lot of Vietnamese came to this country and other countries, but most of them had to return to Vietnam. Some of those who were saved in the camps in Hong Kong went back to Vietnam. They're evangelizing in their country now. And Vietnam's hardline communist country, very difficult for Christians there. So part of our ministry, we work in Hong Kong. There's a little assembly that meets in our home, a little smaller than yours. It's a little different composition. There's 25 Filipino ladies, 3 men, one Chinese lady and one American lady, my wife. So it's about 27 ladies and 3 men, which makes things interesting. But God has blessed us. So some of the Christians in Vietnam invite me to go down there once, twice a year. I do some training of house church leaders in Vietnam. I take once a week. I go into mainland China. Now, Hong Kong belongs to China now, but it still has its own laws, own police force, own currency. We have complete religious freedom in Hong Kong. In mainland China, they don't. I travel frequently into China to take Bibles and other materials for underground churches. And then, because we work with Filipinas, most of our assemblies are Filipina. One couple from our assembly went back 6 years ago. They've started 2 or 3 assemblies in the Philippines, been responsible for another man starting another assembly. So we visit them a couple of times a year to encourage. So our ministry is pretty diverse in for Hong Kong, China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. And no, I don't speak all the languages. I wish I could, but God didn't give me the gift of tongues. Anyway, today I'm going to look at a character in the Bible. I'm aware that I've known Carl and Pat and Lanny and Karen for lots of years. If I tell you how long, you'd think they're old, probably, but I don't want you to think that. So I'm a little nervous being with such giants of Bible scholars in front of me. Lanny even went to seminary or cemetery school or something, I don't know. After 3 years, did they put an empty hand on your empty head and say, now you know everything? They didn't. Oh, shucks. Well, I want to look at an interesting character today. But before I do, I want to just read a verse. I don't want anyone to open their Bible. I want you to leave your Bible closed, please. Now, let's see. Oh, I'm in the wrong book. It helps if I go to the right book. There, that's better. And Lanny probably knows this, so I'm going to eliminate him right now. I want to read one verse. I'm reading from the NIV. I'm not against the King James, but almost everyone I work with has English as a second language, and it's easier for them, NIV. 2 Corinthians, don't look it up, please. Chapter 2, verse 12, and I want to read one verse. Paul says, now when I went to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ and found that the Lord had opened a door for me. That's the end of verse 12. Now, I want to see if you were listening. Where was Paul going? Troas, good. Why was he going there? Preach the gospel. And what had God done for him there? Open the door. They were listening. You know, you're better than 95% of the chapels I go to. Really? I was...
Did you visit Boulevard?
I was somewhere just a couple of weeks ago, and I read the verse, and I said, where were they going? Could you read it again? I'm glad you're listening. Okay. Personally, I think the Apostle Paul loved to preach the gospel as much as anybody. He felt compelled to preach the gospel. He went to Troas to preach the gospel. He got there, he found God had opened the door for him. Now, who can tell me what he did? Good. Who wants to vote for preach the gospel?
Yeah.
How many think that's what Paul did when he got to Troas? Everybody but Lanny. You can't. Now, do you want to tell him what he did, Lanny?
Preach the gospel.
Oh. I'm going to read verse 13. Don't look it up. I'm going to read 12 again, then I'm going to read 13, just so it's continuity. It's all one sentence. Now, when I went to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ and found that the Lord had opened a door for me, I still had no peace of mind because I did not find my brother Titus there. So I said goodbye to them and went on to Macedonia. I find that to be very strange, two verses. Paul went to preach the gospel. God opened the door for him, presumably to preach the gospel. He didn't have peace of mind, peace in his spirit. Why? He couldn't find his brother Titus. Now, Apostle Paul, great giant in the Bible, he felt the need of his brother in Christ. And I want to look a bit at Titus. We don't know a whole lot about Titus, but it struck me, you know, here's this great man of God, Paul, and he didn't stay to preach the gospel. That's why he went to Troas. He didn't do it. He wanted to see his brother Titus. So I did a little research, but I think Titus was almost certainly a convert of Paul. Because in Titus chapter 1, verse 4, Paul refers to him as a true son of the faith. And Paul seems to have trusted Titus with some of the most difficult tasks we could imagine. And I want to look at references about Titus to see what we can learn about him, learn from him. Now, Titus is not mentioned in the book of Acts. In the New Testament, he's mentioned 14 times in 14 verses. He doesn't appear in the book of Acts, but in Galatians, Paul tells about going to Jerusalem, and it's when they were having the controversy, did the Gentiles have to be circumcised to be saved? You know the story. In Galatians, he does say that Titus, he took Titus with him. And I thought about that. We don't know he took any other Gentiles with him. Titus was definitely a Gentile. Paul took him. And Paul pointed out in Galatians chapter 2 that Titus was not required to be circumcised. I'm going to read Galatians 2, verse 1 to 3. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and also took Titus with me. And I went up by revelation and communicated to them that gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to those who were of reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. So Paul pointed out Titus here. Now, I'm reading, I printed this out. This is from the New King James Version. Anyway, Titus was the one Gentile Paul chose to take with him. So Titus was in a special relationship there. Then in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, the verses that I just read, Paul went to Troas and couldn't find his brother Titus. He left, he went to Macedonia. Again, we don't think of someone like Paul needing comfort or encouragement so much, but Paul did. He felt he had to find Titus. Now, I said, Paul chose Titus to do some of the most difficult jobs. And if you remember 2 Corinthians, there's a lot in it about comfort. The first chapter, I can't remember the words exactly, but Paul says that God comforts us not to make us comfortable, but so that we can comfort others when they need it. We know Paul comforted people. Now, he needed it. Someone's going to comfort him. Titus was the one. Now, Paul seems to use that theme in 2 Corinthians several times. And why did Paul need all this comfort? I teach English a lot in China. I'm not a trained English teacher. I'm a trained primary school teacher, elementary school. But I notice things, the way things are written. 2 Corinthians has a parenthesis in it. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, I read verse 12 and verse 13. Paul says in verse 13, I left there, I went to Macedonia. You can put a bracket there, starting a parenthesis. The parenthesis ends in chapter 7. Verse 4, and so reading at verse 5, chapter 7, verse 5, 2 Corinthians, Paul says, "For indeed when we came to Macedonia," chapter 2, verse 13, "I left for Macedonia," chapter 7, verse 5, "I arrived in Macedonia." Then he says, "Our bodies had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts, inside were fears. Nevertheless, God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus." Paul felt the need to find Titus. He did find him, and Titus was a comfort to him. Barnabas was a comforter, but Titus was also. Titus was used by God. Now, Paul tells these Corinthian Christians he was comforted when he found Titus. Don't think anybody is such a great godly man or godly woman, they never get discouraged. Paul had problems, conflicts without, and fears within. Another place he said he had the burden of all the churches. He had plenty of problems. Now, as I said, now, he was comforted by Titus. Well, how could Titus comfort Paul? Well, verse 7 of chapter 7 said, not only by his coming, but also by the consolation with which he was comforted in you when he told us of your earnest desire, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. Now, Paul is writing to these Corinthian Christians. He said, you comforted Titus. You were, see how he says it exactly, yes. Consolation, he was comforted in you. Titus had gone. Why was Titus in Corinth? Does anyone have any idea? He had been in Corinth. Now he's meeting Paul in Macedonia. Anyone know why Titus was in Corinth to begin with?
To encourage the Christians.
Yeah, but...
To
well, he was there to collect money, yes, good, and encourage Christians, because most Bible scholars, and I'm not a Bible scholar, I don't read Greek and all that, but most think when Paul wrote 1 Corinthians, he sent Titus with the letter to Corinth. Now, he asked me what would be one of the most difficult jobs to do in the New Testament, go try to straighten out the church in Corinth. You read through 1 Corinthians, and if you don't know all the problems they had, be thankful you don't have them all here. They had a pile of them. Who did Paul choose? Chose Titus. That made me think, well, Titus must have been pretty special also. So Titus had been there, and things, the Corinthians had repented, they'd mourned, and they'd gotten things right. So Titus must have done a good job. So I think Paul considered Titus to have spiritual wisdom, understanding. He had confidence in him, and he thought that Titus would be able to help set things right. And then chapter 7 again, we'll skip down to verse 13. Paul says, therefore we have been comforted in your comfort, and we rejoiced exceedingly more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. And again, the idea, someone comforts you, you comfort someone else, it goes on. It's not just you're comforted to get comfortable, get over your problems. You should try to comfort others when they need it. And it may be some of your leaders. It doesn't have to be. It could be somebody considered insignificant. Paul's not insignificant, but we should be able to try to comfort others whenever we can. Anyway, verse 14. For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I am not ashamed. But as we spoke all things to you in truth, even so our boasting to Titus was found true. And his affections are greater for you, as he remembers the obedience of you all, how with fear and trembling you received him. Therefore, I rejoice that I have confidence in you in everything. Again, I find these remarkable verses. Paul said to the Corinthians, I boasted to Titus about you guys. Boy, if there was a bunch I wouldn't want to boast about, it'd be the church at Corinth. That Paul had bragged on them some way, I don't know. does say in 1 Corinthians, they didn't come behind in any spiritual gift. They had everything. They weren't using it all right. But it just amazing statement to him, to me, that Paul would boast to Titus, and he found something to boast about. And I think Paul says this partly to comfort the Corinthian Christians. He'd been scolding them pretty rough in 1 Corinthians. Now he wants to encourage them, comfort them some. In verse 15, we see that the Corinthians at first received Titus with fear and trembling. We don't know that much about Titus, but evidently they showed respect. They almost as if Paul himself had been there. So he's not an insignificant person. Now in chapter 8, we see Titus mentioned as having the same care for the Corinthians Paul himself had. Chapter 8, verse 16, "But thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus, for he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord." Here Paul says, yes, I sent him to you, but he wanted to come. It wasn't just a job he had to do. You know, Paul's sending me, I'm going to go. He wanted to go. He wanted to help the Christians in Corinth. He was eager to do it. It seems that Titus was the leader of this group at this time, 2 Corinthians. They were taking up the collection for the Christians in Judea. Titus was not only someone to be trusted with spiritual things, he could be trusted with material things, with money, things like that. And as we go down in chapter 8, 2 Corinthians, it seems like some of those in Corinth had questions about Titus, just like some had had questions about Paul. Paul makes it clear that some had questioned his apostolic authority. So Paul and chapter 8, verse 23, says, "If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. Therefore, show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf." He seems to put Titus on the same level with himself. He's a partner, he's a fellow worker. And then chapter 12, 2 Corinthians, Paul again says Titus acted in the same way that Paul himself had. Chapter 12, verse 17. "Did I take advantage of you by any of those whom I sent to you? I urged Titus and sent our brother with him. Did Titus take advantage of you? Do we not walk in the same spirit? Did we not walk in the same steps?" Paul here saying, you look at Titus, look at me, we're doing the same. We talk the talk and walk the walk. You don't see anything different. Boy, I'd love to, if I'd been around then, Paul say, look, Sheldon's doing just like I am. That's quite a commendation coming from Paul. And he says, I didn't take advantage of any of you, neither did Titus. And Titus, this is wonderful testimony. Then we have the book of Titus, which is a letter from Paul to Titus himself. And again, Titus has been sent or left by Paul. Evidently they were in Crete together. Paul had left Titus there to straighten things out again. Titus got some of the tough jobs. Crete was not a very pleasant place to work, evidently, from some things Paul says. may not have been quite as bad as Corinth was, but there were plenty of serious problems there, and Paul trusted Titus to straighten them out. I'd like to look at a few verses in the book of Titus, chapter 1, verse 4 and 5. To Titus, a true son in our common faith, grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ, our Savior. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. Paul said there's problems there. There's things lacking. And Titus, I want you to straighten it out. Get them going. Titus had evidently done a pretty good job in Corinth. Paul reckons he could do a good job here. Paul used very strong language in the instructions he gave Titus that as to what he needed to do. He says that chapter 1, verse 10 to 14, Paul's talking about some in the church. He said, there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. Didn't say only those of the circumcision, but whose mouth must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. One of them, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. So Paul says, what? You must stop their mouths. You must shut them up. These false teachers in the church, it's not easy to confront people. And we don't know, some of these false teachers may have been in leadership in the churches. You know, is it 2 John or 3 John? Diotrephes, he was certainly a leader in the church, and he was doing things, teaching things wrong. It's not easy to confront. And you're not supposed to bring an idle charge against an elder, but sometimes people in leadership have to be confronted, and Titus was the man Paul was choosing to do this. He said they were teaching wrong things. They had to stop their mouths. And what's he say? Some were deceiving the believers concerning circumcision and other false teachings. Why were they teaching this? He said, for the sake of dishonest gain. They're teaching these things to line their own pockets. Teachers were getting rich at the expense of those who believed what they taught. Sounds to me like they could have been on TV in America, some of them. I watch Christian channels sometimes. I don't spend all day doing it, but some of them kind of upset me. I remember listening to the radio a few years ago. I don't remember the preacher. But he said God given him the gift of healing, and like Paul. If you had bad headaches, send in $10. He'd send you a yellow prayer cloth you put on your head, and God will heal your headache. Or if you had bad stomach, it was a green cloth he prayed over, and you put it on your stomach. That was $20. And then he had one for $50, and things like this. Some of these guys may have been doing something similar. They didn't have TV, so I guess their audience wasn't this big. Paul said, close them down. Then Paul said, they must be rebuked. Again, not easy to rebuke people. Verse 13 says, this testimony is true, referring to what the Cretan poet had said. Therefore, rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith. Verse 14, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men who turn from the truth. Now, verse 13 struck me. Rebuke them sharply, why? That they may be sound in the faith. Paul doesn't even say these people are not saved. Rebuke them so they will be right with their teaching. Get them teaching the right thing. It's possible born-again people can teach the wrong thing. Satan can tempt any of us with money, with whatever. He says, so they may be sound in the faith. I would have said, kick them out. Run them off. But Paul thinks there's some hope for them. As I read 1 Corinthians, I might have said, you know, just shut it down. Don't recognize it as a church or anything else. Tell the few who are really good Christians, get out of there and start a new church. But that wasn't Paul's approach. He saw some hope, even with these false teachers. And tradition, some of the commentaries, tradition says Titus was the bishop of Crete to the end of his life. I'm not quite sure about that. There's nothing to prove it, but chapter 3 of Titus, Paul writes to Titus 3, verse 12, and he says, when I send Artemis to you, Tychicus, be diligent to come to me at Nicopolis, for I have decided to spend the winter there. Maybe Paul needed more comfort and encouragement. I don't know what he was doing in Nicopolis, but evidently he didn't expect Titus to stay in Crete the rest of his life. Okay, things aren't completely straightened out in Crete. I'll send Artemis, Tychicus, they can continue what Titus is doing. Titus, I need you over here. Paul doesn't say the reason, but evidently he wants to see him. And the last mention of Titus in the New Testament, 2 Timothy 4, 9, and 10, Paul here is wanting Timothy to come. He says, be diligent to come to me quickly, for Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia. Titus for Dalmatia. So Titus didn't stay on Crete for the next 40 years or whatever. Paul says, come see me in Nicopolis, and here in 2 Timothy he says he's gone to Dalmatia. Maybe he was picking up some spotted dogs for the Cretan fire department. I'm not sure. Anyway, the tradition that he was the bishop of Crete the rest of his life, I don't think necessarily holds up. But what lessons can we learn from Titus? I tried to personalize it for me, but are you a person to whom others, possibly even a leader of some kind, would turn to in times of distress? Paul viewed Titus as that kind of person. He was distressed. Am I and are you willing to take a subordinate position? Titus was doing what Paul told him to do. He wasn't running the show on his own. I'm not sure that he ever set up a Titus evangelistic crusade or anything. He was in a subordinate position and seemed satisfied to be. And as they say, if I lived at that time, or if Paul lived now, could Paul say of me, are you that we walk in the same way he did? Can we be trusted to challenge false teachers, build up the believers, as it's clear to me that Titus did build up believers in Corinth. Doesn't use that term, but they got things straightened out. And he did in Crete. And I don't think any of us would consider ourselves to be like an Apostle Paul. The apostles, I believe, just for the first century or that period. When the last apostle died, we don't have any apostles like that anymore. But we could all strive to be a person like Titus.